Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 4, Text 2, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Shonaka Uvacha, Suta Suta Mahabhaga, Vadano Vadatangvara, Katang Bhagavatim Punyam, Yadaha Bhagavan Chukaha. Shonaka said, O Suta Goswami, you are the most fortunate and respected of all those who can speak and recite. Please relate the pious message of Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by the great and powerful sage, Shukadeva Goswami. Purport, Suta Goswami is twice addressed herein by Shonaka Goswami out of great joy, because he and the members of the assembly were eager to hear the text of Bhagavatam uttered by Shukadeva Goswami. They were not interested in hearing it from a bogus person who would interpret in his own way to suit his own purpose. Generally, the so-called Bhagavatam reciters are either professional readers or so-called learned impersonalists who cannot enter into the transcendental personal activities of the Supreme Person. Such impersonalists twist some meanings out of Bhagavatam to suit and support impersonalist views, and the professional readers at once go to the 10th canto to mis-explain the most confidential part of the Lord's pastimes. Neither of these reciters are bona fide persons to recite Bhagavatam. Only one who is prepared to present Bhagavatam in the light of Shukadeva Goswami, and only those who are prepared to hear Shukadeva Goswami and his representative are bona fide participants in the transcendental discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam. Shonaka Uvacha, Suta Suta Mahabhaga, Vadano Vadatangvara, Katam Bhagavatim Punyam, Yadaha Bhagavan Chukaha. It may seem astonishing or improbable to us that impersonalists comment on the Srimad Bhagavatam, as we're used to hearing it from Srila Prabhupada. So why would they want to go to the Bhagavatam, which is clearly describing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna? But nevertheless, it is a fact which Prabhupada therefore addresses repeatedly, especially in this first canto of Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam has to be heard from devotees, persons with full faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is fully dedicated to worshipping Krishna in pure devotional service, who is not an impersonalist. So in reading this, I was thinking of last night, I was trying to do a systematic, progressive overview of what is philosophy, coming to the point of Krishna. But as it happened, I suddenly got cut out and we had to skip much of the last part. Maybe that was Krishna's arrangement also. We see that there was, in the questions at the end, there was some polite protest at Krishna being, or the ultimate supreme being, Krishna, the Supreme Person. Up to that point, I'd mostly spoken in general terms of the search for the absolute truth. But that absolute truth is Krishna. Satyam Param Dhimahi. He is the Supreme Truth who is to be meditated upon. That impersonalists do not like to accept. It's not just a matter of philosophy. It's not just a matter of philosophical understanding that they cannot understand. Intellectually, they're capable of doing so. But emotionally, they're not capable of doing so because they're envious of Krishna. That's why so many big philosophers, they don't understand Krishna. or they protest against Krishna being the Supreme Personality of God. Because ultimately, they are envious. Buddhism is prominent in this country, and it's also quite prominent in Nepal. Due to mostly the Tibetans, Nepalese, I think they're not. Among the native Nepali people, some of them are Buddhists, but the prominent, like the Gorkhas, and they're all Hindus, isn't it? Gorkhas are the main caste, isn't it? Or, and then there's the Brahmins, and they're all Hindus. But anyway, Buddhism appears to be a very gentle and good religion. Ahimsa Parama Dharma. Lord Buddha says that the supreme dharma is non-violence. That's why I was surprised yesterday when you told me that how far they've strayed away from the Buddha's injunction when the case against the Asanti Asok was made, that the proof that they're not real Buddhists is that they're vegetarians. Around each other, but they were, I mean, actually they were very aggressive against the, what we could call the government-sponsored monks, in pointing out that, that the, what goes on as Buddhism in this country is not Buddhism, not least because they're all meetings. So, Buddhism appears to be a very gentle, mild religion, and the culture is there such as that they have military coups just like they had less than a week ago here, is it? And no one gets shot. And even after some time, the deposed ruler is reinstated, not as a leader, but they don't kill him or even punish him, usually. They just let him off. So Buddhism is a culture. It promotes many good qualities and moral values. However, ultimately, it's probably the most envious teaching on earth, even more so than Islam. Although, I mean, that was one hell of a statement. I don't want to make that too often. That Islam is an envious culture. Actually, Islam cannot be. Islam means surrender to God, so it cannot be envious. Cannot be envy. But as it's promoted or propagated, there are certainly prominent elements in Islam that promote violence. Recently the Pope made a statement that was saying that Islam was, what was it, something like a violent religion or something, and in protest that this is not true. We're not a violent religion. They made so much violence. So, whether it's true or not, for better or worse, Islam has a reputation in the non-Islamic world as being a force to be feared, because if you don't let them do what they want, or if you even slightly criticize, they don't want to discuss, and there's immediately violent retribution. That's why you'll find if in some school book or something they make some mistake, and then they make some statement about Islam that Muslims don't like, then they'll protest with violence and they'll immediately rectify it because they're afraid. It's a fear-inspiring ethos that's promoted That's a generalization, but it's not wholly off the mark. Whereas Buddhism is very peaceful. Even, at least, we can say, especially as it's practiced in this country, although in Sri Lanka, the Buddhist government forces are smashing the Tamil tigers. They're fighting with them. And also, it's not that Thais can't fight. But in general, it's known as a peace-promoting ethos, and they try to do everything in a way that, according to the Buddha's precepts, which are not his precepts, but the common precepts of not giving harm to others, satyam bruyat, priyam bruyat, ma bruyat, satyam apriya, that one should speak the truth, one should speak pleasingly. This is from Manu, the lawgiver for the Vedic society. One should speak truthfully, one should speak pleasingly. One should not even speak the truth if it is unpleasing. So, Buddhism appears to be very gentle and mild, but philosophically it's deep envy of the personality of Godhead. My experience of the time I was preaching in Thailand is that Thai people, they remain very calm. They don't get upset easily. When they get upset, you have to be careful, because they get very upset. There's nothing in between. They don't get slowly upset. They just go from smiling one minute to killing with the next. But one thing I found is that often Thai people will get upset if you start to talk about God. They don't like that idea. They're actually very much opposed to it. So this philosophy that everything is nothing, in as I was talking yesterday about Buddhist arithmetic, 1 + 1 = 0. So it's actually very envious, denying the existence of the personality of Godhead, and denying the existence of anything, of ourselves also. Although they're very busy enjoying the non-existence with their non-selves. So this Buddhism, impersonalism, they are cousins, bad cousins, Akasura, Bakasura. They want to kill Krishna. They're very envious of Krishna. So we see this influence is very strange. Practically everyone, even the non-Buddhists, the Muslims were speaking yesterday at that meeting. But even though they believe in what, for want of a better term, is called God, they're very strong to, especially in Islam, they're very strong to deny the personality of God. They don't like that. They think that it's blasphemy to speak of the person, to speak of God as a person. So I didn't have time to go through all that discussion of philosophy of the supreme, even with neutral philosophical speculation, we can accept the supreme as a person, and then if he's a person, should have personality. So I didn't, in answering the question, I was able to do so to some extent, but it's very, very difficult to convince people of this part, because mostly people, when we talk about philosophy, first of all, most people are not interested in philosophy, and then the next thing is, even if they're interested in philosophy, as Prabhupada uses this, he says here, a bogus person would interpret in his own way to suit his own purposes. Philosophy, mostly it's for people, for their own purposes. Whatever they want to believe, they believe. It's not that people are sincere seekers of truth, but what they want to believe, they believe. That's all. So, we can present philosophy like this, as we did yesterday, but actually the basic principles of religion, mercy, truth, cleanliness and austerity, which are upheld by no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, it's important to emphasize these principles also, because people who are meat eaters, what are they going to understand about philosophy ultimately? And their idea of philosophy is just some intellectual adjustments, gymnastics. But for one who is in the lower modes of nature, by eating meat, then their consciousness remains highly polluted. And the beauty, the appeal, the charm of Krishna, it's very difficult for them to appreciate this. Of course, our movement is not meant just for promoting vegetarianism. There's a lot more than that. But at the same time, it is important, we should impress upon people that as long as this is a sinful activity, Prabhupada writes here in this first canto, in one of the later chapters, he speaks about the appearance of Lord Buddha, and he says, he emphasizes that Buddhists, how are they Buddhists? They should stop animal killing. Animal killing is the cause of so many problems in human society. They're surprised how they're afraid of terrorism, but at the same time terrorism is being promoted by animal slaughter. So the basic principles of religion need to be understood, but we see how much resistant people are. You know, saying that the main argument against the Santiyaso being Buddhists is that they're vegetarians. They're so much against the idea of not eating meat. They're so addicted that we should eat meat, and they have the idea it makes you very strong. It gives you lots of energy so that you can enjoy sense gratification more. Prabhupada writes in one purport in the fourth canto that materialistic people advertise that we require meat so that we can be strong, so that we can enjoy sex. And then to keep the balance between meat eating and sex, it's required so that we can take wine to digest the meat, so that we can work hard like asses. So very wrong ideas. It's been with no scientific evidence whatsoever, they've promoted that eating more meat will make you strong, which like I said, there's no scientific proof whatsoever. And we see that the elephant, the buffalo, they're strong animals, but they don't eat meat, they just eat grass. So they've just assumed this or presumed this because they want to eat meat. It's also interesting that this Santiyaso, they became so much persecuted. It may be that if our movement becomes more prominent among the Thai people, it's quite likely that their niceness may change to not niceness. When they feel, as long as they're not threatened, as long as their sense gratification, as long as they feel their sense gratification is not threatened, then they're nice. But then when they feel their sense gratification is threatened, then they become not nice. So if we're promoting no meat eating, and we should accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who we have to subordinate ourselves to, then they may become not very nice. Mm-hmm. Impersonalists, they like to be nice. They smile and say everything is wonderful. We should tolerate everything. So they tolerate all kinds of nonsense. But if we like to speak the truth, then they become very intolerant. This man was saying this, that all universal principles, your universal principles, my universal principles, we can meet together. But no, your universal principle, you say, you eat what you like. No, we can't accept. There's their idea that we should tolerate everything. We should accept all opinions as equal. It sounds very good, but it's logically flawed. Because if someone's opinion is that we don't accept that all opinions are equal, then you can't accommodate both accepting all opinions as equal and also accepting the opinion that all opinions are not equal. So he didn't like that when I was saying that there is truth, but it's not that everyone is on the same level. I didn't say everything is all the same. It's all one. And he didn't like me. He became disturbed by that. However, truth is truth. Fact is fact. And that should be stated. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actual truth is as given in Srimad Bhagavatam, and we should adhere to that and not compromise with impersonalists and voidists. So any question about this? Sarvamita dutam manye yam maam vadasi keshava. Arjuna said to Krishna, I accept everything you say. So that's all right? You accept everything I say? Why? I'm not Krishna. But if I speak as Krishna speaks, then we should accept it, that's all. And if I don't speak as Krishna speaks, then kick me in the face and throw me over the balcony. But I have no intention of doing that. So you need not resort to such uncultured methods. Any question? No, you're all convinced. Is it? Alright. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gopi.